So it's a bit late. So we, about 12 minutes late, don't worry. Because when I was coming out, my wife called her car, the radiator, I think, the water, suddenly the rubber burst. So no water, I think temperature heat up. So she got to stop the car somewhere. So I sent Stephanie to look after the car. That's why I had to turn back, send her back, then come down. So don't worry, just let things be. Okay, we can start now. We will do the usual puja. We'll get Sister Lee to help us to read the Heart Sutta. Then after that, we will read the English version, followed by the Theravada puja. Okay. We pay respect to Buddha, Bodhisattva, Kuan Yin, and all the others. Then we start.
南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，波耶婆罗蜜多心经，观自在菩萨行深波耶婆罗蜜多时，照见无蕴解空度一切苦，而舍利子舍不异空，空不异色，色即是空，空即是色，受想行识亦不如是。舍利子是诸法空相，不生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减，是故空中无色，无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味，诸法无眼界，乃至无意识界，无无明意，无无明尽，乃至无老死亦无老死尽，无苦集灭道，无智亦无得以无所得故，菩提萨多依波耶婆罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故无有恐怖，离颠倒梦想究竟涅槃，生死诸佛依波耶婆罗蜜多故得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提故，知波耶婆罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，是无等等咒，能除一切苦，证实不虚，故说波耶婆罗蜜多咒即所咒曰：揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨。
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will recite the English version. The Heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta. Turn to page 1. When Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing the profound Prajna Paramita, he illuminated the five skandhas and saw that they are all empty, and he crossed beyond all suffering and difficulty. Sariputta, form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. Form itself is emptiness. Emptiness itself is form. So too are feeling, cognition, formation, and consciousness. Sariputta, all dhammas are empty of characteristic. They are not produced, not destroyed, not defiled, not pure. And they neither increase nor diminish. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, feeling, cognition, formation, and consciousness. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind. No sight, sound, smell, taste, object of touch, or dhamma. No feel of eye, up to and including no feel of mind, consciousness. And no ignorant or ending of ignorant, up to and including no old age and death or ending of old age and death. There is no suffering, no accumulating, no extinction, no way, and no understanding or no attaining. because nothing is attained. The Bodhisattva, through reliance on Prajna Paramita, is unimpeded in his mind because there is no impediment. He is not afraid and he leaves distorted dream thinking far behind. Ultimately, Nirvana. All Buddhas of the three periods of time attain Anuttara Sanyat Sambohi through reliance on Prajna Paramita. Therefore, know that the Prajna Paramita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It's genuine and not false. That is why the Prajna of Prajna Paramita was spoken. Recite it like this. Gate gate paragate parasam gate bohisattva. Okay, we will now start the Theravada Puja. We will recite the salutation to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kamisu micchacara viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majja pamadatthana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the Buddhas, Bodhisattva, and worthy ones. Okay, we will recite the verse for opening a sutta before we start. Turn to the page before page 1. Verse on opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, then we can start. We will start from where we stop. Okay, first refer to the notes, the short notes. 16 Heart Sutta, dated 17th of June. This one is last Sunday. Short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the sutta discussed. So part one is a recap and emphasis of the previous lesson. So before we continue, I just want to let you all know next Sunday the class will be cancelled because I will be away. I will leave for Singapore on Friday morning, so I won't be back until Sunday night. So we have to cancel both the Saturday class and the Sunday class. Sister Lee will send you the notice. But for the Tuesday and Thursday, it will be on as usual. Okay, we go to the recap, the notes. The six internal sense bases are our five physical sense bases and our mind base. This is what the Buddha referred to as your internal sense bases, because they are within your body. And the six external sense bases are the respective six types of sense data, or object of the senses, like color, shape and form, for your eye. Vibration, like sound, music, noise, etc., for your hearing, ear, etc. So just like when we recite the Heart Sutta, they also mention about the six external and internal sense bases. Upon contact of mind, their respective sense door consciousness comes to be. And like the physics laboratory experiment of the light bulb, the switch and the battery, upon contact the light bulb lights up naturally. This is the key. It happened by itself, okay? So in the same way, our sense door consciousness, they are also naturally conditioned arising upon contact of mind with their respective sense bases and sense object. That's why sometimes you hear about the 18 sense rhyme. The 18 sense rhyme is the 6 internal, 6 external, plus the mind make contact, the respective 6 type of sense door consciousness come to be. So 6 plus 6 plus 6 is 18. That's how the 18 sense rhyme come to be. So this is how you have to develop the cultivation of the Buddha Dhamma. Contemplative wisdom refer to the second turning wisdom called Chittamaya Panya, whereas the meditative or Bhavana type, like via cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness, it refers to the third turning wisdom. And that wisdom is called Bhavana Maya Panya, wisdom born of Bhavana or mental training, meditative training. Wisdom is always linked to harmony. This is key. That's why I always remind you all, whenever you are not peaceful, not happy, means you don't have harmony within your mind. Understand? That's why you are not peaceful, you are not happy. There is something that disturbs you. So without harmony, you don't have wisdom. That's why I say whenever you can easily check, you are not peaceful and not happy, the evil roots are there. Greed, hatred and delusion are there. Otherwise, you won't be like that. So, wisdom will lead to harmony, lead to peace, happiness, joy. Reason why the wise one always in harmony. That's why, this is also the reason why the wise one, they are always in harmony and at peace, no matter what happens. Anywhere, any place, any time. Sensual desire and ill will are the first two hindrances of mind that will always arise when one reacts to one sense experience without wisdom. Because you don't have wisdom, you want things your way. That's why you react. The moment you react, there is no more harmony. Reaction of mind also implies disharmony and wanting things our way. So this is the Dhamma you need to reflect and contemplate. So that you are ever heedful and mindful of your mind state. Memory is useful for remembering one's house address, name, bank account and signature, etc. But not for grasping, clinging, and holding on to our unhappy, sad, and fearful memories of our psychological hurts and emotional past. These scars of memory must not be clung on to. Otherwise, it can condition our sadness, grief, sorrow, and lamentation, fear, insecurity, unhappiness, unhappy emotion, etc. Memory should be left in the brain as it is, like the ROM and the RAM in the computer. You know the computer? Read-only memory, random access memory. When you need them, you go and access them. Then you use them. That is, we do not cling on to it, but only access it when we need to use it or make use of it to perform certain useful and appropriate action. So if you have this understanding, memory is perfectly alright. But if you don't understand, you constantly accumulate those type of very fearful and unhappy memory. This is the one that can trigger off the wrong thought. That's why wrong thoughts are thoughts that will condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sadness, your selfishness, your emotion, all the evil roots. So these are all wrong thoughts. As thoughts are response to memory, so if you accumulate the wrong memory and you deludedly, constantly go and think about it or hold on to it, that's how people enter depression. Become very unhappy, become very depressed. Okay, we move on. True and actual meditation only begins when one's daily mindfulness has stabilized. This is very true. You must always remember, ultimately, it is sati or mindfulness and heedfulness that brings about the meditation. So without this sati or stable daily mindfulness, there is no way you can understand what is going on. You cannot cope with life because your sense of consciousness, they arise and pass away very fast. So that is also the reason why when one is always aware and heedful throughout the day to investigate the Buddha Dharma in daily life, we are cultivating the four foundations of mindfulness to truly understand who we are and what we are. Also, how we function as a human being via self-knowledge. How we become what we are via understanding how our mind stirs at the moment of sense experience, and how we are conditioned into various mind states of suffering due to our own delusion and ignorance. The silent mind in clear, stable awareness or mindfulness will be able or will enable us to be aware of sense or consciousness at every moment of sense experience, thereby enabling us to witness all of the Buddha Dharma, like the Four Noble Truths, the Law of Dependent Origination, etc., as taught by the Buddha, within our own form and mind, or phantom length body. This witnessing via the direct seeing can give rise to a lot of wisdom leading to the awakening or enlightenment in the here and now. So this is a summary of what we went through. So do you have any question on this first part, recap? Don't have, Good. Don't have means we go on. Part 2. Part 2 actually summarizes the key point of the Heart Sutta that we were discussing. Silence your mind and be aware from within or inside and realize the true mind. Then you will understand why only wisdom free and liberates the mind and nothing else. Then like Master Xuan Hua's commentary, he said, with wisdom, see, the key word is wisdom, you can very naturally, without doing anything, reach the other shore of Nirvana very, very easily, very, very naturally. You get to the other shore without any need to expend any effort at all. So this part is very important. That's why Xuan Hua and all the Mahayana cultivation, they always emphasize on reversing the light to shine within. Hui Guang Fan Zhao. When you silence your mind, reverse all your attention back into your inner awareness. From there, you can understand what is going on. Without the realization of what the true mind is, the silent mind is, very difficult for you to understand the Buddha Dhamma. Very difficult for you to actually put to investigation the Buddha Dhamma, the teaching that the Buddha taught us. Okay, there is a very good question by one of our sisters at that time. Is the divine innocence of a newborn baby same as the enlightened state of the enlightened one? The answer is no. The newborn baby's condition is different. Only the mind state of pure perception is quite similar. The reason being, in the case of a baby, the so-called pure perception comes about via a brain that is still quite innocent and pure, in the sense that it is not conditioned by any memories, views, conditioning, or concept and words as yet. But it is not born of wisdom like the enlightened one. Whereas for those of the enlightened one, their perception are still pure perception despite the memory, the conditioning, etc. due to their wisdom. That is like a lotus flower. They are still pure and above the lotus pond, even though they originate from the filthy lotus pond. Just like all the bodhisattva and even the Buddha, they are born into the world, same as we all, living beings. The world is still the world, a place where the dualities are. Everything is just whatever that the living being experience. But because of their cultivation, their perfection, they are able to develop this wisdom and understanding, and they can stand above the world. Understand that? That's why the wisdom free, nothing else. When you have the wisdom, memory is not a problem. When you have the wisdom, form and mind is not a problem. But when you don't have wisdom, then you have a lot of problem. Okay, this part I think is quite easy to understand. Then later on we will go into the deeper part. Today's topic will be more interesting. Okay, we go to part 3. The meditation part. When encounter adversity without wisdom, the mind will stir to condition our unwholesome thought and unwholesome emotion. So this is a reality or a fact of life. So if you were to investigate into your own life, you will come to know whenever you encounter adversity, means problem, situation, when there is no wisdom, the mind will stir to condition our unwholesome thought and unwholesome emotion. Like today, if I like you all very kanchong, I will say I cancel the class. I say my wife more important, I will sort everything out. But I know it's not life and death, understand not? So can be resolved quite easily, small matter. Even major matter, if there is condition for it to arise, it's meant to be, then it will be. So you only need to attend to it, understand? No amount of fear, worry, anxiety is going to improve the situation, understand not? It's only through understanding. That's why when she called me, I never even like reacted or say, no, I'm going off to Beijing, sir. Why you call at this time? Then it become very bad. So then she become very annoyed. Understand? I'm your wife. You do all this type of thing. You think I'm not important? Beijing, sir, more important. Your dumb friend. So all this misunderstanding can arise if you don't have the wisdom. But for me, it's okay. I just ask her what happened. He said very lightly, like the other time when we use our friend's car when we were traveling in the other friend, Auntie Gumoy. She was using this BMW, quite old the car. So I was helping her to drive in the middle of this federal highway. You know what happened? Traffic jam. Somewhere near Bangsa, PJ come out. We wanted to go to somewhere KL there to have our dinner. So halfway in this traffic jam, in the middle of this federal highway, we were caught in the inner center lane there. All of a sudden, there was a very loud burst, pop, like explosion like that. Then smoke come out at the back. Then they say, what sound? They thought somebody fire a bullet. But I realized very common is the radiator, the rubber burst, because of the pressure. Then I saw the one that indicate the temperature, oh, start to shoot up. I said, your radiator is without water now. We need to find a place to stop. So luckily, I know that place quite well because last time I worked in the university. So I know if I turn off up to Pantai, I will be able to park my car there. So I had to cut across 5 or 6 lanes. But luckily, the traffic let me pass. I put on emergency light. Then I signal left, then I came out. Then exactly when we were able to reach the mosque outside MU, the temperature was so high. So I have to stop the engine. I said, then I call up my friend. Then I talk to the guard. Oh, the guard very kind. He said, okay, you can park here overnight. Tomorrow you get your mechanic to come and tow it out. Then my friend, very kind, he came with his car, fetched the 4 of us. We went for dinner after that. So no problem. As usual, life still go on. We were still happy. Because without this thing, we won't go for that good restaurant. We are gumoy. Suddenly, like out of gratitude, say, tonight I buy dinner. I say, I take you all to this Japanese restaurant. Very nice one. What is the name? I forgot already. It's along Old Klang Road. Azanti, I think so. So we went, had a good dinner. Then the next day, she called his mechanic. And the mechanic said, oh, that place I know, is he can go there because MU, very easy location, the KL gate. So if you know how to resolve situation, you don't have to worry, you don't have to panic. You have to understand the reality. Then do what you have to do, understand not? So there is no such thing as a problem, if you understand. So this is how the Buddha also teach the same, he said. When living beings encounter adversity without wisdom, the mind will stir to condition our unwholesome thought and unwholesome emotion. You know what are unwholesome thought? Your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your unhappiness. A lot of people will have reacted, why so sweet? For no reason, the car just breaks down. This is all negative thought. When you think that thought, are you happy? You become worse. But if you just laugh at it, meant to be, will be. There is a reason for everything. Everything is just condition arising. So these are things that you can learn. So that's why my wife today, the same thing happened. Then he said, I think like that day. The radiator must have pochong. And she was so lucky. He fetched her sister from Singapore, just came back from the 1U, the what they call, there's a bus service they call Aeroline. She fetched her. On the way back, I think halfway in the LDP, she heard the sound pump. Then when she drove back, about to send her sister back, near the bomba there, suddenly she realized something wrong, so she turned down. Luckily, she was able to turn down and park down there. Then the engine died because overheat. So these are the life situation and condition that you can learn. That's why I think maybe we are at this topic, that's why it happened. And it's a very good example for you all to learn. So you learn how to solve your life problem situation without having to arise the unwholesome thought. without having to panic, understand or not? Stir your mind. What for? You only need to understand what is going on. Do what you have to do. Focus on the issue. Resolve the problem. Solve it. Then move. Make the appropriate decision. Okay. The Buddha teach five ways to overcome all these unwholesome thoughts and emotion that has arisen. All this we had already gone through. I will read through it quickly. This is, I think, the third time we are going through. Think of the direct opposite wholesome state. Example, if there is anger, then develop metta or loving kindness. And if there is cruelty, develop compassion. And if there is fear, develop the faith or the wisdom. Second way is think of the consequence of holding on to this unwholesome thought or evil thoughts. This unwholesome thought conditions your evil roots. If you do not abandon it, then the evil roots are the roots of all evil. It will condition you into becoming an evil person. Example, anger will condition you into hatred and violence. An angry person can kill, harm, and abuse others. So this is obvious, Third way is just to relax and just let things be. And this is a meditative way. We are understanding that the natural state of mind before it stirs is already the meditative state of peace, calmness, and silent inner awareness. Your mind is already like that. And that the very flowering of the unwholesome thought is the very ending. The very ending of that thought. If we don't give it any more fuel of proliferation. So now my wife and Stephanie is here. They are joining us at the back. So they just came in. The fourth way is even more beautiful. The Buddha said you can develop the wisdom by cultivating Dhammanupassana. This one is the fourth foundation of mindfulness. Trace the origination factor and then retrospectively reverse it via the cultivation of mindfulness of Dhamma, Dhammanupassana. That is, via cultivation of the mindfulness of the six internal and six external sense bases. This is to develop the wisdom to free. So when you are mindful of the mind, you are mindful of the sense bases, you are mindful of the sense data, upon contact, you will be able to understand what is going on. Then you will understand why the Buddha teach you this six internal sense bases and six external sense bases and the law of dependent origination. All this you will come to understand. Then when you understand how defilement comes about, how upon sense contact, the contact of mind with the sense bases and our sense data, how they trigger of sense or consciousness. Then because of delusion, how you grasp and cling. So you trace the origination factor. Means everything, your unwholesome thought, your defilement, your hindrance of mind, your negativity, they arise after you react to sense experience. Because you don't have the wisdom, you don't have yoniso manasikara, wise attention at the moment of sense experience. So due to that delusion, sakaya didi, ignorant, you react, your mind stir. This is what the Buddha meant by condition arising. So you trace the origination factor. When you trace how it come about, you understand. Then retrospectively, you develop the wisdom to free. So that next time when you confront the same type of sense experience, you are now more calm, more peaceful, more wise. So retrospectively with the wisdom, you can reverse it. You don't have to stir your mind like before. So this is a very important cultivation, the fourth way. Third and fourth you combine, you will develop the wisdom. The fifth way is, the Buddha say, if all the four above meditative advice also cannot help you, then you must use your own self-determination as recommended by the Buddha, with clenched teeth and your tongue against your palate or towards your palate. you should determine strongly to abandon the negative unwholesome thought. So this one, you have to do it if all the four above also can't help you. Then there is a question. This is a very good question by one of the brother. I think it's by Brother Stephen. Is it all right to indulge in positive thought during formal sitting meditation? Example, like recalling thought of good deeds, etc. The answer is not so advisable because it is like trying to create good memory of a good state for a good state or happy moment or happy mind moment, which is a form of thinking and self-indulgence or craving for this happy mind state. Whereas radiating loving kindness or metta is different because it is not really thinking. It is from the heart with the pure feeling of true metta. Means you really sincerely have this metta in you. And you are silent and you radiate that peaceful love or metta sincerely from your heart. So this is very different from thinking. Understand? That's why if you just like the parrot, just repeat, parroting, means it's not from the heart. It doesn't have this, what they call, metta from your heart. It doesn't radiate out with that feeling, that sincerity. When you are in the sitting, try not to do that because it will not bring about the bhavanamaya panya, the meditative wisdom, born of the third turning of the Four Noble Truths. During the formal sitting meditation, the main purpose is to initially train and tame the heedless thinking mind into a relaxed state of silent inner awareness. Then after it has stabilized, keep it silent and just aware within to understand what is going on within our own form and mind, to develop the third turning, direct seeing wisdom. See? The direct seeing can only come about when you are silent. If you are thinking, then you cannot, as taught by the Buddha. Understanding that the first and second turning wisdom are less penetrative than the third turning wisdom, which is born of the direct seeing. Understand that the first and second turning wisdom are less penetrative than the third turning wisdom, which is born of the direct seeing. Hence the second turning reflection, contemplation and inquiry into the truth as proclaimed by the Buddha should only be done during normal daily mindfulness training and silent, relaxed, contemplative session and moment. So you can do this contemplation and reflection, but you do it when you are in a relaxed state of contemplating. Even in retreat, when they give you like they call it your own time, free and easy. Either you're supposed to wash up, clean up, or do whatever. So if you have this time, then you can still be mindful in the moment, but in a very relaxed manner. Then because you are relaxed, you can actually contemplate. I contemplated a lot during the early days. Even in retreat or not in retreat. Because later on I realized I don't have to be in retreat to contemplate. I always contemplate when I'm alone, wherever I am. Sometimes in the midst of life, nature, I just silence my mind. Then I can perceive a lot of things. Then I reflect and contemplate on the nature of the human life, the human psyche and consciousness. Then I look at nature, I look at society. Sometimes in the midst of watching TV, I reflect and I contemplate. And it's so beautiful. So many things came up. If you understand, television is not a problem too. Computer and internet is not a problem too. But it's not easy, I tell you. Many people get trapped by all this. That's why certain masters or teachers or what they call meditators, they always advise the cultivator, keep away from the TV, keep away from the internet, because they are very dangerous. Especially Master Xuanhua, he called the TV, I think, I forgot what word he used. It's a very severe word. Is it like a like something that will distract you, spoil you? He called it something like monster. I don't know. But you don't worry. When you have the wisdom, understanding, and the mindful, when you are training yourself, you have to confront. You have to understand why your mind stirs. Like the Buddha said, he told Ananda, when one of the monks came and talked to them and discussed with them. So Ananda was thinking, maybe that monk who came, what he said was very true, he said. Because this monk said he got another teacher that teach him. He said, see no evil, hear no evil, that's why you are peaceful. Ananda thought this is beautiful, right? So abstain, don't see all those things, then hear no evil. So that's why you're always peaceful. Then they came and see the Buddha. They introduced themselves and they explained. Then the Buddha actually reprimanded Ananda. He said, when did I teach you this style of Dhamma? I never teach you that. So what the Buddha told Ananda was, you have the eye. You open your eye, you see. Whether it's evil or not evil, is nothing to do with outside. It's your mind inside. Understand? If you have delusion, then it becomes evil. Understand? So I never teach you see no evil, hear no evil. Don't see, don't hear. No, don't shut off from the world. Be in the world. If you have wisdom, you will still be peaceful, he told Ananda. So it's nothing to do with the world, what people say and what people do. If you don't have wisdom, then you perceive in negativity, your mind stir. It's due to your own ignorance. Don't go and blame outside, understand? Don't say all these other things that cause me to arise the defilement, cause my mind to stir. Nobody in this universe can make you unhappy and miserable unless you yourself choose to allow it to happen through your own delusion. So that is the meaning. Okay, any question or not? Do you have any question regarding the short notes? If you don't have, then we continue with our Heart Sutta. I still can make up the time because we went through the notes very fast. Okay, turn to page 35. We are on this new chapter, the conditioned body. We are at this verse. He illuminated the five skandhas and saw that they are all empty. So this one is spoken by who? Spoken by who? The sutta, spoken by who? Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, is it? So, Avalokiteshvara, when he zao jian wu yun jie kong, remember? When he illuminated the five skandhas, the five aggregates of form and mind, he realized that they are all empty. So this is the verse we are now studying. We are now going through the commentary by Master Xuan Hua. Then we develop the discussion together. So the verse, Master Xuan Hua tried to explain it with a poem. The tree light shines everywhere, permitting the three forces. The one returns to the place of union, yet the one comes forth again. See that form is emptiness, and that feeling is the same. False thoughts are shifting current, while formation, you know what is formation, sankara, mental formation, mental volition, mental intention, mental states, mental thinking and activity. These are all under sankara, but Xuan Hua, they all use this word, formation. So while formation is the arranger of karma, this is because the mental intention is there. So they call karmic volition to a volitional action. With consciousness which stands which understand differences. Differences means discrimination. The five shadows are completed. Mirror flower and water moon, beyond defiling dust. Emptiness is not empty, the great function of clarity. Vision is yet not a view. Happiness indeed. So this poem is very meaningful, very beautiful. But if you don't have somebody to explain, it's quite difficult for you to understand. How many of you can understand this poem? How many of you? If you can, I rejoice, I salute you. Anyway, you turn to the commentary. This one is very important. The three light shines everywhere, permitting the three forces. You know what are the three lights? Here they refer to the sun, the moon, and the stars. Which illuminates everything in this universe and thoroughly penetrate the three forces. So for the Chinese, the cosmology, they always got these three. What are the three? Heaven, earth, and humanity. Tianti, then human being, humanity. Even they all play this type of game. They call Pai Gao. You heard of Pai Gao? Tin Te Yan Ngo. They call it the Tianti, the highest. Mui Chong Sam, Tin Te Yan Ngo, Mui Chong Sam, something like that. I cannot remember. It is the order of what they call the universe. So, the three light are also the light of wisdom. This is very important. The three light, they are light of wisdom. The light of prajna of language. The light of prajna of contemplative illumination. And the light of prajna of characteristic of actuality. The light of true prajna of characteristic of actuality is the very deep prajna light by which Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva illuminate the five skanda and saw that they are all empty. You know, this one is the third one, understand not? Of all the three light, the light of true prajna of the characteristic of actuality, understand not? This is the third turning light, very penetrative. That's why it is very profound. So they say, the light of true prajna of the characteristic of actuality, which is the third type of light, is the very deep prajna light by which Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva illuminate the five khandhas and saw that they are all empty. With the three kind of light, he illuminates every place in heaven and on earth, and the light pervades the three motive force. You see, these three types of lights, if you look at the first one, the first one is the light of prajna of language. What is this? Prajna of language means what? Spoken, isn't it? Correct not? So it's similar to your first turning. Your first turning is proclamation of the Dhamma by the Buddha. So you hear them, understand not? That's why Suttamaya Panya, through hearing the sutta, the teaching as taught by the Buddha. He used language, understand not? So the first light is the light of prajna, based on language. It's another way of putting it. Then the second light is what? The light of prajna of? What is it? Contemplative illumination. So what is your second turning? You contemplate, inquire into the truth that you have heard, understand not, that the Buddha has proclaimed. So, Chintamaya Panya, the second turning is this one, contemplative wisdom. Wisdom born of inquiry, contemplation, and reflection on the truth that the Buddha has taught. Whereas the third one is the direct seeing, understand not. So, the third one is the light of the prajna, of the characteristic of actuality. What is actuality? Actuality is seeing as they are, isn't it? This is the direct seeing. That's why Bhavana Maya Panya, the third type of wisdom, is through Bhavana, meditative. You use the silent mind, no more thought, understand not? That's why you silent your mind, no more thinking, no more contemplation, understand not? That's how you see things as they are. You see the reality, the truth, the actuality. This is the penetrative one, the turning. So you look at the note 11. You look down there, note 11. What is this note 11? The three types of light are also said to be symbolic. It's actually not symbolic. This type of light you can see in your meditation. So it's very different. The first one is red. The first turning wisdom, normally it comes with this type of light, red. Then the white one is the contemplative one, more penetrative, but still not profound, not the real penetrative one. The third one is what? This is the real one, violet or purple. This is the one. Those who have cultivated this, they will know. That's why during the early day, the first time I said, I don't know what this is, the nimitta that came to me, violet, purple, very beautiful, fast changing. It just come by itself. And it's so beautiful. And that time I don't know what this thing is. Yeah. Then the funny thing is, when I was young, I like purple. I like brown. Purple, especially violet, this color. Ever since I was young, I like this color. Very funny. So then later on, I found in many places about this type of light, wisdom light. Even that Ogawa, that Japanese, supposed to be a very famous Buddhist Zen master too. He actually set up also the, it's another type of Buddhism, not really the traditional conventional Buddhism. He called it the IRH, I think, Institute of Research for Human Happiness. Then he also talked about this Alcantara. You heard of this? Alcantara. Happy science, Alcantara. This guy also got talk about this type of lights, all the various type of light that came from the cosmic. What light symbolize what? So, not important, but there are bases. Otherwise, people wouldn't write like that. I don't mean everything that is written is the truth, but there are certain type of teaching that actually understand. That's why they know. And then when they are able to understand, they put it down. Then for the cultivator who has the ability to develop the cultivator, they will know. Like this one, when I read, I straight away know the meaning of this type of light. Very different. Okay, we go on. The one returned to the place of union, yet the one comes forth again. This part of the, what they call the poem by Xuan Hua is very beautiful. The one refers to what? The oneness. The oneness. Your own true nature. The Buddha nature or whatever. The place of union is where one's own nature dwells. Understand or not? Or the source. Basically, it is this. 10,000 Dhamma return to one. One return to unity. So say the verse from Sun Quang. You look at note 12. He is also known as Hui Kuo, the second patriarch of the Zen school of Buddhism in China. You know, the first patriarch in China is Bodhidharma. Tamo. Bodhidharma. Tamo Zhusi. Then from there, he passed it down to the second patriarch. The second patriarch is, they sometimes call him Hui Kuo, or also called Sun Quang. So he used this verse, the 10,000 Dhamma return to one, the one return to unity. Unity, you read note 13. According to the text, Jyotirvīrīya, the second line of the verse reads, to what does the one return? They always ask this. So Seng Kuang at first didn't understand and ran after Bodhidharma before him by Bear Ear Mountain, kneeled there 9 years seeking Dhamma to escape King Yama. You know who is King Yama? Supposed to be the king of hell. Yan Lo Wang, Gyan Wang. They believe King Yama is responsible for your rebirth. So he wants to be free from birth and death. So after uniting with the Buddha nature, see, the one comes forth again. This is the giving birth to the wonderful functioning of the one, which is the Buddhahood, you realize. The one that comes forth again is just you and this Buddha. That's why the Heart Sutta always say, "Zhen Kong Miao Yu." True emptiness is wonderful existence. When you come back, understand not? In the form of Buddhas and Bodhisattva, life become wonderful. This is the meaning. After uniting with the Buddha nature, means after you have gone back to the source, the oneness. The one comes forth again. This is the giving birth to the wonderful, see? Wonderful, understand not? True emptiness, wonderful existence. Functioning of the one. That's why this one, it cannot come out, understand not? The Buddha nature cannot come out. It needs a body. It needs a form and mind. That's why karmically conditioned out. That's why the Buddha, that form and mind, 2,000 over years ago, that is the functional body, the physical body. Then when he connected at the age of 35 under the Bodhi tree, the spiritual body came back to him. He inherited all his perfection. Sambhogaya kaya. The functional body is Nimana kaya, understand? That performed the function of the Buddha. That's why he needs this vehicle to come. Then together with the Sambhogaya kaya that connect, he became enlightened. That's why these two bodies, Nimana kaya and Sambhogaya kaya, when the two come together, it performs the function of the Buddha. That's why it becomes the Dhammakaya, speaks the Dhamma. Understand? So this is the profound meaning, which is the Buddhahood you realize, the one that come forth again. It's just you, this Buddha. That's why it's very profound. So if you truly want to cultivate the real wisdom, the third turning, the prajna, of actuality, the very penetrative one. You have to walk the Bodhisattva way, you have to walk the Buddha's way to realize the full enlightenment, perfection of all the perfections, to be a Sammasambuddha. And this is the one that can actually come and really, really transform living being. That's why the Buddha, when they come, they are very different. That's why even Sakyamuni, he came, he transformed so many. Then his Buddha Sasana supposed to last for 5,000 years. But because of the Bhikkhuni order, he said it will be shortened by 500 years. So 4,005. So now we way past 2,005. You are left with less than 2,000 years. So whatever it is, we are very fortunate. That's why I said, if you have the condition to be born as a human being, you have the condition to be a Buddhist encountering the Buddha Dharma, this is your best chance for liberation. Because this is the era where the teaching is still around, where the Buddha Sasana is still around, the Buddha dispensation is still around. So this is the time, if you don't put forth the sincerity, the determination to walk this way, it is very difficult for you to actually come upon a second chance. The next one, don't know how long it takes. If you miss this window, it can be pretty long. That's why I always say, your life, you decide how you want to use it. For those who understand, if you really miss this window of opportunity, it can be very, very long before you can have another of this golden window, golden opportunity. So you decide how you want to develop your future understanding. Okay, we move on a bit. See that form is emptiness and feeling is the same. This part is very interesting. You cannot see form, yet it's fundamentally empty. The sutta say that form is emptiness. What does that mean? We common people are attached to form, to a general form body in which the many kind of form dhamma are united. This is what we call our physical body. How can we say that the physical body is empty? See, Xuan Hua asked you this question. Someone say, it's really here, because you can feel it, isn't it? It wear clothes, it eat, it sleep. And how can it be empty? When you understand how form can exist, you can be empty. So this part is very important. When you understand how form can exist, you can really be empty. So Xian Hua again now try to explain to you. I spoke earlier about the emptiness of analyzed Dhamma. You remember? At the Theravada level, at the Arahant level, they develop their wisdom through the understanding of emptiness at the analyzed Dhamma. The body is analyzed as the summation of the characteristics of form which are united together. That is the way it is. That's why you have the four elements. Earth, water element, fire element, and wind element. The four great elements, Mahabhatu or Buddha, are the different shaded characteristic of form. The form body comes into being when the earth element, water element, fire and wind element unite. The skin, the flesh, the muscle, the bone, and our bodies are the great earth element. Those parts that exhibit solidity, they are your earth element. Then the saliva, the urine, the excrement, water and sweat are the great elements of water. Whatever that exhibit cohesion, fluidity. Then the heat element of our body is the great fire element. That's why you got your temperature inside you. And the circulation of the breath is the great wind element. Not only your breathing, all of your vibration within your heartbeat, your pulse, your vibration, these are all your wind element. That's how you have that posture, your backbone can be straight. The four great elements unite to become a body, and when they separate, the body is destroyed. So each of the four elements returns to its original position, which is emptiness. So they use this analysis, Dhamma, analyze Dhamma, understand? But there is another one that use the mind Dhamma, go beyond. Most people are attached to the body as me, as the I. That's wrong. The body is not me. You have to understand why not you. Then what is me, you ask? You can control your body and have perception of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, touching and knowing. It is the perception nature which is me. So then what is the body? One can only say this body is mine. See? Here Xian Hua try to make you understand slowly. Not this body is me, understand? My and me is different, isn't it? Because it is conditioned out for you to use. Understand? So that's why like things belong to you. But it's not you. Understand? Like your car. You buy, the law recognize, so you own. Understand? So this car is mine. You cannot say this car is me. You are not so stupid. Or you buy this house. This house is mine. You don't go and say this house is me. But why the body inside your body, the form? You cannot understand. you say this body is me. You say you die, you sick, you got a lot of pain, a very bad health. All this is delusion. So this body is mine, not this body is me. This body is like a house. You live in a house, but you do not say this house is me. Isn't it? If you were to say that, everybody would laugh at you. Isn't it? So now say everybody would laugh their teeth right out of their mouth. It is a Hokkien or Chinese proverb, isn't it? Chiu a ge bun lut. Siu dong a lat sai. All those things. But when you refer to your body as me, most people don't laugh because they also live with the same proposition. Because you always think this fellow is you. Understand? This is where sakayaditi is, self-delusion. Understand not? Because you are so used to thinking that it's you. But it is just the same as supposing that your house is you. It's you. Because you live in a body house, you say it's you. In the body, there are seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, feeling, and knowing. But are those the Buddha nature? It is the Buddha nature which is you. That's why you have to realize. All this seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness, they are not you. They are not your Buddha nature. They are not your true nature. What are they? What are they? How do they arise? How do they arise? We already went through so many times. How does the consciousness come to be? How does it come to be? You have a mind that make contact, isn't it? Like the light bulb, isn't it? It's a light up, isn't it? So when it light up, what happens? You become conscious, isn't it? So what is this consciousness? Condition arising, isn't it? Causal phenomena, isn't it? And it's not you, isn't it? It arises naturally, isn't it? Because of nature's condition. So when you see that, how can this be your true nature? How can this be your Buddha nature? How can this be you? That's why you have delusion. You grasp and cling to the five aggregate of form and mind, which are empty. Even feeling is the same. Feeling come and go. Consciousness come and go. Your perception come and go. Your activity of mind, your emotion come and go. So why do you gullibly grasp and cling and hold and believe that it's you? Like what we went through earlier on. If it's not you, the five aggregate of form and mind, why do they arise in you? This is what you need to understand through the meditation. This is what you need to investigate deep through your silent mind. Then you start to see how they arise and how they pass away. Then you start to see the condition arising, causal phenomena, empty nature, impermanent characteristic. The moment you grasp and cling, give meaning, you suffer. That's why the impermanent, the suffering state and the nonsense, they are all there for you to see. For those who see, they always see. For those who don't, they never see. They grasp and cling and become miserable. So, who are you? What are you? You have to reflect deep into it, meditate to understand, to awaken to it. This is how the Dhamma can actually become very powerful. When you really reflect, contemplate and meditate, and you awaken to it, you suddenly like wake up. Then you realize, hey, what is all this going on? No wonder the Heart Sutta say the five aggregates are empty. They are really empty. And there is not me. That's why it's anatta, not you, non-self, empty nature. Because it's condition arising, causal phenomena, byproduct of your true nature, nothing to do with your true nature. Your true nature is ever, ever present. The essence of mind is always there. That's why it's the unconditioned, can never disappear. That's why it's eternal life, never born. That's why it never dies. And it's always there. because you have deludedly forgotten what that nature is. You grasp and cling to the karmic force that condition the form and mind, the false, the fake one, the fake you. Yeah. So that is the one that create the delusion and the what they call Sakkaya Ditti. Mm. Okay, we go on. Huh? If we take a look into form and analyze it, form itself is empty, it doesn't exist. Therefore, it follows that emptiness can be changed into form Dhamma. How does the change take place? Earth, water, fire and wind element merge to become a body. It has been said that God created people. His work of creation was just a matter of putting earth element, fire element, water element and wind element together. If we use earth, fire, water and wind, we can also create a human being or a person, or a lot of person. Anybody can do that. A few materials are used, and a person is created. When the condition cause come together, a person is created. When the condition cause come together, a person comes into being. When the condition cause disperse, that so-called person, human being or being, cease to exist. That's why everything is condition arising, causal phenomenon. If you understand that form itself is emptiness, then you shouldn't perceive the body as me. It is only a possession. It just belongs to me. But here, essentially, you should not be attached. If you take the attitude that the body is what I have, then you will want to help it along. And you will make up your mind. Your body is slave. Sorry. And you will make your mind, your body slave. Eh? You look at the note. Eh? The quotation is from Tao Yuanming, a celebrated poem. Returning home. In the poet talks about returning from an official position, which he felt compromised his position. Yeah. So this one is regarding the poem. Eh? We continue. Eh? But here especially you should not be attached, he said. If you take the attitude that the body is what I have, then you will want to help it a lot. And you will make your mind, your bodies. Sorry. Then you will want to help it a lot. And you will make your mind your body slave. Ah, okay. Here mind means your awakened mind, enlightened mind, which can understand that your body is a form Dhamma and therefore unreal. Therefore, don't be attached to it. Destroy the form khandas and the form skandas, or aggregate will be empty. You see, this part is how they explain about emptiness, the four elements, due to analyze Dhamma. So, at the form level, you have this. But if you go to the mind level, you will understand why form is emptiness. Because like what we went through, I explained to you what thought is, what matter is, understand not? Actually, thought is matter, understand not? Thought is actually form. Because from the equation Einstein discovered, E equals to mc squared. Thought is energy, understand not? But energy got two components. All of the form, they are trapped energy, understand not? That's why when you release it, E equals to mc squared, understand not? The nuclear energy, the potential of this form. So, thought is the basis of consciousness. The mundane consciousness are all thought-based. And from thought, it creates form. Understand? That's why from the void, everything can come because of this, what they call, principle of duality. Yeah. It's split. split into duality, the two come together still zero, void, empty. Understand? So the duality part is where people cannot understand. So thought has the power to create form. Likewise, form can release back that energy into thought. Understand? That's why they are all interchangeable. So those who understand, they always tell you thought is actually form. The form Dhamma come from thought. So all this, the human body, karmically conditioned now, is all thought-based, understand now? Because karma, mental intention, that's a conditional. So this form Dhamma come from the thought, understand now? The conditioned Dhamma of karma. Then all this table, all those external form that you come to perceive, even the plant, the planet, everything, they also come from mind, understand not? Thought, consciousness. Because like this table, without thought, without the carpenter using his thought, gather all the material, it won't come to be. That's why all these are product of thought, understand not? That's why from the mundane mind, the thinking mind, thought-based, it created the world, the universe, through what? Consciousness. That's why consciousness can create all this. That's why thought-based. So when you understand thought has the power to create all this, you will come to know thought has higher intelligence than matter, than form. That's why thought can see form. Form can never see thought. Then when we cultivate the Dhamma, when we connect to our spiritual nature, then we come to understand thought is a product of consciousness from your nature. Then you realize the nature, the consciousness, the pure awareness has higher intelligence than thought. That's why awareness, the nature, the silent mind can see thought. Thought cannot see awareness. So this is how you slowly, slowly return. So the earlier poem, the 10,000 Dhamma return to one, you understand that or not? That is the creation that the Buddha actually also taught. You can return all of creation back to mind. You see, initially, you have what you call the Buddha nature, okay? From here, you start come out, okay? So this is where your true mind or pure mind. True mind or pure mind. This is your pure awareness. Your silent mind. Okay? Awareness. Or silent mind. Through this, you create what? What do you create? Thought consciousness, isn't it? This is what your mundane mind is. This is the one that create the world of consciousness. That's why all of the thing that you come to perceive, the seeing consciousness, the hearing consciousness, the smell, the taste, the tactile, and the thought consciousness, all this is what you create. So thought create the form. Understand not? So all of form, your physical form, external form, the star system, the world, everything, they come from consciousness. The mundane mind, the thinking mind, the thought. So if you want to return this, you have to return the, actually here he mentioned 10,000. The actual one is the myriad. You know what is myriad? M-Y-R-I-A-D. Means countless. All this that you have created, you can only return through your wisdom and understanding, through your meditation. Because you know this is the source. This is the one that create all this. Understand not? So you can return all of form, mental form, or whatever sense door, sense data, back to consciousness. And this is the one, this is the mind consciousness. And when you return this back to your pure awareness, what happened? That's why the 10,000 Dhamma return to one. One return to unity. That's how you go home. This is like your source. This is the source of all things. From here, everything comes from. Then, from here, everything returns. That's why you want to realize the oneness, the Buddha nature. You have to return all of your creation back to your oneness nature. Then all these creations cease to be. Then you understand clearly the unreality of all this. This actually, the form Dhamma come from mind Dhamma. Mind Dhamma come from the true mind. And the true mind come from your nature, your Buddha nature. Yeah. So this process, this is how you lost yourself. From here, you come out. Then you take the form of the five aggregate of form. This is the one that takes you around the world. Not only the world, space and time. You become the traveler. Traveler in space and time. But this is not time traveling. This is karma. You become a traveler in space and time. Because you deludedly grasp onto what? You grasp onto the knower. The mundane mind, the conscious mind. You think there's a thinker behind the thought. You think there's a knower. So the knower becomes the human being. And this is the one you deludedly grasp onto. And this is what your five aggregate of form and mind is. When you deludedly grasp onto this, then the knower becomes the living being or the human being. Living being or human being. And this one become the traveler in space and time. This one continue to take birth, the five aggregate of form and mind. That's why you continue to take your spin in samsara. Continuous birth and death. But the moment you awaken, you realize this is not you. Anatta, empty nature, non-self. The five aggregate are empty. Immediately, this one ceases to be. Understand? Then you can see clearly, this is the one that created everything. That's why the universe and the world. Consciousness created the universe and the world. The knower become the living being. That's why you go and get entangled with all this creation that you yourself create. It is through delusion that the living being get caught. And this is very difficult to understand. Only the real cultivator, the true enlightened one, they can understand the unreality of this form and mind, the empty nature of this five aggregate of form and mind. Do you have any question? I think we should stop here. About 4:35. I exceeded 5 minutes. So we will stop here. So this is page 38 we finish. Okay, we stop here. So next week no more, no class. The following week we come back. We will continue from page 39. So you go back, you try to reflect, contemplate, then you try to develop your own understanding of what this is. Then we can have a better discussion. Okay, you got any question or not? I can still take question. Because this part is very important. How many of you cannot follow? You cannot follow. Then you better ask question. Whatever part you don't understand, you should ask.
Cannot follow. Don't know how to ask. Okay. That means whatever we see outside, that are all forms, are actually created from our thought consciousness.
Okay.
Right? And this thought consciousness is present because is it starting from the contact consciousness? That contact?
Okay. That one is still all your mundane mind, because your mundane mind can make contact. Understand? Upon contact, consciousness comes to be, because the mind, together with the body, they create a condition for human being to manifest. Understand? That's why the five aggregate of form and mind can arise. You got sense basis, then you got this consciousness, then it make contact, then it trigger off. Understand? That's why you can create through your senses, the seeing consciousness. You can become conscious of what you see. You can become conscious of what you hear, you smell, you taste, you tactile, you feel and think. So all this is consciousness based. Understand? So who are you? What are you? Without the senses, you are nothing. Understand? You are nobody. But because of the senses, you come to know the world. How do you know the world? You know the world through what? Through what you see there, through what you hear there, through what you smell, taste, tactile, feel and think there. That's why they talk about what? The world of sight and sound. Correct?
At this point, it is also through our past that create what we see.
No, what you see is always within the moment. Because seeing consciousness arises in the moment. Your past is karmic, understand? Karmically condition our physical form and mind, understand? Then this so-called human being come, okay? You deludedly believe this is you, that's why there is the delusion there. That's how human beings get trapped. But who is this form and mind? Who are you? What are you? That's why you have to meditate to understand how this form and mind can come out. That's why I want to teach you about thought. How through thought, mental intention, you create karma. Then the nature's law, law of karma, can use your this karmic nature to condition birth. That's why when you are conditioned into this world, this form and mind is not you. It's actually a vehicle for you to come. And that's why this form is partly karmic. Karmic is mental, understand? That's why this is a product of thought, understand? Karmic, mental intention. So through this vehicle, when you come, you don't know how to connect. That's why you don't know your source. You don't know how you come. That's why you don't know how you die. If you don't know how to live, you don't know how to die. Delusion will take you, like what that one say, you deludedly grasp and cling onto this form and mind, thinking that there is a person inside, there is a knower. So this knower become what? This knower is what you call me, I. And this is the delusion that condition you to suffer, grasp and cling. That's how karma take its role. That's how you entangle yourself and create all the karmic conditioning with all the beings, the environment, the universe. That's how you continue to create, understand not? So form and mind, is what the thought is capable of creating, understand not? So the world of consciousness is creation, understand not? You can say God create, because God is like your oneness nature, the eternal light, the eternal nature. So from here, it creates through consciousness. So consciousness creates the form. So that's why the mind right form, the universe, the planet, the star system, everything come from this thought. Understand that? It arises. So if you want to understand the creation, you will have to understand how you can return all this and come back to the source. Then you understand how everything come to be. Then there is no more delusion. Then the knower loses its power. Understand? That's why the Buddha teach anatta. There is no one to know. There is no being there. This form and mind is not you, like Xuan Hua said. Because it's karmically conditioned now, a vehicle for you to use. Understand now? So you have to reflect and contemplate deep into the reality of what this form and mind is, and really penetrate the deep meaning. Here today, I don't have time. I only share with you what Xuan Hua teach you, because the real understanding of the empty nature of form is totally different, very deep, much, much deeper than this. So the reality of the form Dhamma and the mind Dhamma are very different. Form Dhamma is the consciousness that cannot understand, cling, grasp and create, believing that they are real. But those who have the understanding and the wisdom, they return all our form to mind. Then they realize, actually, there is no form. Without mind, there is no form. That's so this part, yeah. You want to ask something, Andy? Pass the mic to Andy, yes.
I think Bertie explains very well. So eventually we go back to the source.
You can call it the source.
So the source is consciousness, if I understand.
No. The source is the oneness nature before creation. You know what is the source or not? Source of all things. Like the great Tao. The Tao. Tao.
Tao.
The Lao Zi one, the Tao.
Okay.
The Tao. Nothing is apart from the Tao. Everything comes from the Tao. The Tao is the source of all things. But whatever that you can describe or talk about is not the true Tao. Because the source is like that. It's the source of all things. But it's the beginning, before any creation, the original nature, Pen Lai De Mian Mo. Originally, it was just the source, the oneness. There was nothing. Then from this, everything comes about. The mind right creation of the universe come about from that source. That's why it's the source of all things. Everything comes from here. It starts from here and end here. That's why from here everything comes. The source you cannot talk about, because it's before creation, before even the pure mind, the pure consciousness, the true mind, is before all this. So that's why from the source, the Buddha nature, then there is what this realization of the true mind, the pure awareness. But that is your nature. Your nature cannot talk, no word, nothing. But it can be aware. The essence of mind is there. Understand that? Then from there, it can create consciousness. That's why it can create thought. So the first thought of ignorance and delusion is the one that conditioned the living being into space and time. Then this thought become more and more sophisticated until it can create a body, a form through coming.
Okay, I mean, I can appreciate and understand that. The source is still...
No, the source is the beginning.
The beginning.
You cannot talk about. It's before creation. It is the oneness, the complete thing, without all the creation. But nothing is apart from the source, because this is the source of all things. From here, everything comes to be, because it can create. You can also return. Understand? So the returning is the wisdom part. When you understand how all this come out, then you know how to return them. Then the moment you know how to return, that wisdom is the one that allow you to understand the total secret of life. Means you understand how all this come to be and how all this can be written. Then when there is this what they call return to the source, it's not a person who return to the source. It's not a being. That's why the Buddha say it's anatta. Even the unconditioned is anatta. That's why he says sabbe dhamma anatta. He never says sabbe sankara anatta. Sankara is the conditioned world. But he says sabbe dhamma, all of dhamma, whether it's the conditioned or the unconditioned, they are also anatta. Means it's not a being inside there, not a person who returned to source and become the one. No. That's why Nibbana is not an individual. Understand? It's not a place or a heaven or what. Nibbana is a realization that the form and mind sees. The so-called mundane consciousness is to be no more five aggregate of form and mind. No more mind. You cannot talk about it. That's why you cannot describe it. It's only to be realized by the wise, each for themselves. Those who have entered cessation and the karmic force, the five aggregates still able to sustain itself. That's why they can still come out. And they can still have this wisdom and use this form and mind to live. But when they have this wisdom, this five aggregate of form and mind is non-grasping. Understand? They are no more upadana khandas. Whereas the non-enlightened one, the normal putujana, they are grasping because of the ignorance. That's why they call it, in short, it is this delusion that condition your five aggregate of form and mind into grasping aggregate that the Buddha call dukkha, suffering. Okay? So this is the part, yeah.
Yeah, Brother Teo, yeah. When they say that returning to the source, right? So when...
It's not a person return.
It's not the person return.
Return everything to the source. No, return everything to the source means the understanding that you don't go and create anymore. You don't go and deludedly believe all this creation anymore.
That means when they attain Nirvana, right? So when it attains Nirvana...
It's actually realization. Is a realization.
It's not dying.
No, there is no one to attain. Attain means there's like somebody attain. You attain something or something attain. But the mind that realizes itself and sees.
Okay.
The five aggregate of form and mind that realizes itself and sees. It realizes this is all empty. That's why it cannot arise. It cannot create. Then the moment it sees, you cannot talk about it. Because there is no language, no concept. Before the knowing, there is no mind, nothing.
Interesting. Follow with Sister Lee's questions. Yeah. When someone attain Nirvana or
realize Nirvana,
does it mean that the true awareness and the pure awareness, the true mind and pure awareness here?
Oh, no. No, because the cessation happened at the third one, the thought, the five aggregate form mind, that one ceased, no more.
So no more.
That mind, the one that create this thought, the form and mind that create this thought, actually realize itself that this is all delusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because of delusion of avijja, ignorant, that's like avijja paccaya sankhara. You remember? The dependent origin, the dwelling. Because of ignorance, you start to create sankhara. Thinking, activity of mind. That's why they call karmic volition. That's why you create karma. But the moment there is wisdom, it doesn't create because there is no more avijja. So sankhara ceases to be. That's why sankhara ceases to be, vijnanang ceases to be, the mundane consciousness ceases to be. Without that one, the five aggregate of form and mind ceases to be. So that's why when everything ceases, there is no more contact, no more sense basis, no more human being. That's why the whole mess of suffering is to be. So when you talk about enlightenment, you have to be careful. There is no one to be enlightened, like what the Heart Sutta said. Because those who understand this form and mind is not you, understand? This is just karmically conditioned out form and mind, a vehicle and a tool for you to use to live. But because when you develop the cultivation, you develop the ability to connect another, connect to your true mind. The true mind is the one, that one. That one is the essence of mind. The essence of mind can be there because you got this five aggregate, because it is connected. But that connection, you can never link unless you develop your mind meditation, unless you are able to connect. That's why it's only through heedfulness, through sati, mindfulness, because that one is without thought. That one is without thought, before the knowing, the pure awareness. You want to say is the awareness, because it's the essence of mind. You know what is essence of mind? I give you this example, you understand. Like you are completely silent in the middle of the night. Yeah? In the middle of the night. There is no vibration, nothing. Suddenly you can perceive the silence of the night, the silence of nature. There is no vibration, nothing, understand? So no hearing consciousness, understand? The mind cannot make contact, understand? Then what is it that knows the silence? It's your essence of mind. It's not consciousness anymore, understand? It's not a condition arising nature anymore. But there is an essence of mind before the knowing. The moment you know, the aggregate come out already. Understand? The perception come out already. The thinking come out already. The aggregate you create already. But the essence of mind that can realize that silent means it's aware. Understand? Before the knowing. That's why it can be aware of silence. And that is your essence of mind. And that is your true mind. Before the stirring. Before the creation. Before the knowing. Before the coming out. That's why the baby is like that. No memory, nothing. Very near, but not due to wisdom. Whereas the enlightened one is because they use this to meditate. The pure awareness, the true mind, the silent mind. This one can see clearly because it understands what these are. Because when you are silent, it can see the thought. It can see the content of consciousness. It can see the Dhamma that the Buddha talked about. And it know how this form and mind got entangled. Then through that meditation, when you connect to this true nature or the silent mind, then you develop the wisdom, then you awaken, you start to see. Then this one is the one that is connected, because karmically you are linked. Understand? This is the one that has the wisdom to tell this form and mind, hey, wake up. That's why this form and mind doesn't suffer anymore. If you want to talk about this form and mind enlightened, yes, but it's not you, understand? That's why the Buddha 2,500 over years ago is not him. That is the segmented life that he used to come, understand not? That's why you remember the previous two sessions, we talked about the Arahant, no more rebirth. Understand? The segmented rebirth, no more. But the thought consciousness, the outflow, still there. Yeah, his mundane mind hasn't collapsed, hasn't ceased. That's why this outflow is still there. But he is no more ignorant. That's why the last thought, the death consciousness, will not condition rebirth consciousness. He got no more ignorant. So all this thought, the proliferation of thought, the mundane mind, is not a problem to him. But this one, the outflow hasn't ceased. Because it hasn't ceased, it cannot go the bodhisattva way. Those who go the bodhisattva, they come through the vow, the very, very heavy vow. Understand? The vow that is born of love and compassion. Out of love and compassion for the living being, they vow to come for the living being. The limitless living being. And they know, living being is only five aggregate of form and mind. Actually they know, no one born, no one die, no one sick. But yet they come, because they know there is such thing as existence, such thing as life within the conditioned world. There is a lot of other things. So based on that understanding, you will slowly, slowly come to understand how the meditation can actually connect you to your true mind, your true nature, the essence of mind. You know what is the essence now and then? Yeah? Because your mundane mind need condition for it to arise there. You need sound and vibration for you to hear something in there, so that you can be aware of the hearing consciousness. But when there is no sense data, no vibration, no sound, no music, nothing, how come the mind can be aware of silence? Who is aware of silence? What is aware of silence? It's not a consciousness. It's not a conditioned arising state. It's an unconditioned. That is the essence of mind. Every being that come, you have this essence behind. But living being cannot know this because you dwell in the thought. You think a lot. And when you think a lot, you forgot there is another nature inside that can understand without knowing. Yeah. Before the word, without words, without concept, nothing. It can see things as they are. That's why it can understand all of phenomena, all of thought, all of the content of consciousness. That's why you use this for meditation, the direct seeing. Then you awaken. This is the real third turning, very penetrative type of meditation. Yeah. The first two turning are more towards the what they call the less penetrative but also very important, because they prepare the base for you to understand the Dhamma, the truth. So first through hearing, because first time you will find it very interesting, then you need to understand it more. So the Buddha introduced the second turning. That's why he gave you all this. The first noble truth is that this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood. So you reflect, contemplate, inquire deep into it to understand why he asked you to do that. And this is the one that can give rise to the very, very much more penetrative, contemplative wisdom. The second turning wisdom. But this one is still not the third turning. It's not the direct seeing yet. It only can awaken those who have done it in the past. Their past cultivation, they have done it a lot. That's why sometimes they come, they hear only, they awaken. Then sometimes they hear already, they need to reflect, contemplate, then they awaken. These are for people who have cultivated before. For those who have not, you have to work on the third turning. And the third turning is the sati, mindfulness. That's why with sati, mindfulness, heedfulness, you connect to your true mind, the essence of mind, before the knowing, the silent mind. That is the real meditation. If you cannot be silent, you cannot understand the truth. You cannot awaken. The wisdom is not penetrative enough. Okay? Okay, we were break for 2 minutes. We will start the meditation session. You just relax yourself. Then I think everybody is here before, so we don't have to go through whatever. So you can immediately start your meditation. Somebody off the line. Stephanie, thanks. You're off the line. Okay, you just relax your body and mind, then you just silence your mind. For those who have still yet to train your mind, you can either use your mind sweeping method, then you train the mind to be silent. Then after that, you develop some form of metta to help you. Then you can start your training of the mind to be heedful or mindful through either anapanasati or any object of meditation that you are familiar with. Then for those who already have trained their mind, you are able to be mindful, relaxed and aware. You continue with this, what they call mindfulness of the in and out breath, anapanasati, until it becomes very stable. Until this anapanasati, most of the time your awareness is with your breath. The mind doesn't run already. So when you reach the state of heedfulness, when your mind is most of the time aware, you just relax more and more, silence your mind completely. Then you just feel the breathing. Allow the breathing to go on naturally. Initially, you will have this long breath, which is very calming, very peaceful. You allow it to happen. Then allow this calmness to stabilize. It will actually trigger off what they call piti. Piti is a type of mental rapture and mental calmness, a spiritual joy, where it will make you feel very peaceful, very calm, very joyful, especially the first time you realize that state. then you continue to relax and let go of that state. The mind become more and more quiet, more and more tranquil. Then it become what they call very blissful. You will enter sukha. Sukha will come to be, and it's intense joy, intense happiness. They call it what they call a type of bliss. So during that state, if you don't cling, you just relax and continue to be aware and silent. Your mind can become very quiet until it become very still. They call that paucity. Paucity is an enlightenment factor. The paucity is the still mind, the silent mind, very near to your true mind. So when your mind is very quiet, very still, you just silent everything and stay at your heart. Relax and stay at your heart. Don't try to do anything. Then whatever happens, you just feel aware, silent. You just develop the understanding of what is going on with your form and mind. Then through that silent mind, your vibration will become more and more fine, more and more fine, until your breathing, everything become very subtle. Then like no breath. Actually, there is still breathing, internal breathing, but you cannot perceive it, like there is no breathing. So during that time, you don't try to do sitting and touching. You don't try to verbalize anymore. Don't try to focus and concentrate anymore. Don't try even to be mindful of the breathing anymore. You just silence your mind, completely silent. Stay at the heart. This is to allow you to develop the silent mind so that the mindfulness can go up to another level of refinement, so that your sati can become very, very much more refined. They call it the mahasati. The mind is trying to enter sati, means the mind can become mindful on its own without any object of meditation. During that time, your mind will be very different. You just silence everything and stay there. Then when you are able to stabilize that silent mind for quite a while, then suddenly, one day, you will come to know this very, very much more refined sati, or they call it the mahasati, will be able to detect all the very subtle breathing, subtle movement, any turning movement or any vibration or any of this very subtle breathing. You can still detect it. The mind can still be mindful of it. During that time, you will be very different. Your mind will be able to have this sati anywhere you place your mind. You want to feel any part within your body, your organ. The moment you become aware there, you will be able to feel all the vibration and activity that is going on. Then you can even look into your brain, your heart, your chest, or any part within your form that you want to find out. All of the phenomena, the vibration, the consciousness, and whatever that is going on, you will be able to detect them. You don't need a stethoscope. You can even hear your own heartbeat. You can even perceive very fine sound and vibration from distant places, even the ticking of your clock, or your watches and all those things. Sometimes you can even perceive the breathing of the people around you. So all this becomes possible when your mind is very silent, very tranquil, very peaceful, and when your mindfulness is very, very stable, very, very refined. So you continue to relax and silent. Then continue to allow this stillness to develop. This sati, when you are able to stabilize in your form of meditation until the mind like slowly start to become so still and so tranquil, then it will enter samadhi. Samadhi is the continuous paucity and sati. When there is no more thought, there is only tranquility or paucity. The mind becomes more and more quiet, more and more silent, more and more still, until it becomes very intense. Then anything that arises through your sense door, it will be aware on its own. It will understand on its own. This is the mind that will allow you to do your daily mindfulness very easily. Later on, when you come out, your mind that is already in sati, this is the one that you train in your formal meditation. This is the one that will allow you to be mindful of everything that is going on. You will all of a sudden very surprised, like you can be mindful of so many things because your mind has entered sati. So the moment of seeing, you are in sati. The moment of hearing, you are in sati. The moment of breathing, you are in sati. The moment of sense, consciousness, you are in sati. So that sati is very, very powerful, very refined. And this is the one that can allow you to understand a lot of things. You can see things as they are very clearly. Then you will start to see the flow within nature. First, you can see through your sense door consciousness, the vision, the continuity of this mindfulness that will allow you to like perceive things like a flow. You will see your own mental flow, your own physical flow, and nature's flow, and everything like flow without thought. You're just aware. When you are able to reach that type of mindfulness, your daily mindfulness becomes very easy. Then you can cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness very easily. Satipatthana become very easy that time. Then you will start to awaken and you will start to understand the Buddha Dharma, the teaching by itself, by yourself. So I will allow you to develop your own meditation. Then after about 15 minutes, I will ring the bell. Then we continue with the Q&A, meditation reporting. Okay, you can meditate. Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have it now, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Okay. As usual, try to maintain whatever inner mindfulness, inner awareness, inner calmness that you have developed. You have to maintain this trained mind for as long as you can, especially the quality of mind of heedfulness, apamada. Apamada means after you have trained your mind to be mindful, you have to use this mindfulness to be aware, to develop the meditation as taught by the Buddha. This is ever mindful to cultivate the Buddha Dharma, or the meditation as taught by the Buddha, namely the four foundation of mindfulness, which is part of the Noble Eightfold Path. So that is the part you have to constantly do it. Means you are here to train your mind to develop this sati, heedfulness. Then after that, use it to live life. Use it to develop the daily mindfulness, the cultivation in life. That is the real meditation. You cannot develop the sati sampajana or mindfulness of the four posture followed by the clear comprehension. Mindfulness and clear comprehension of every activity, every movement in the present moment. Very difficult for you to develop the true wisdom. Because ultimately, it is this understanding of how you function as a human being in life itself that will allow you to have the wisdom, the awakening, the direct seeing. That's why satipatthana very important, starting with kaya, the first of the four foundation of mindfulness. And you have to really understand why the Buddha teach that way. The first category of practice is anapanasati, mindfulness of in and out breath. That is just train your mind to be heedful, to be aware. Then from there, use it to cultivate the four posture, the daily mindfulness, sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, movement and activity in the present moment. You can do that, the initial wisdom will come, the initial panya will come, born of the first, second and part of the third training, turning of the four noble truths. Once this initial wisdom come to be, your faith in the Buddha and his teaching, your virya, your sati and your sadha become very strong, then it will condition you to actually develop the higher wisdom, the subsequent meditative training. Then you can move on from kaya to reflect and contemplate and meditate on the four elements, the 32 part, the 9 stages of cemetery decomposition. Then you move to vedana nupassana, foundation on mindfulness, your sati, your awareness. You can be aware of feeling, the various type of feeling, how your pure feeling has been conditioned into pleasant, unpleasant feeling. How the mind develops this pleasant or unpleasant mental state. Then it can also come about through what they call the mind that sometimes is indifferent. That's why it has this attitude of neither pleasant or unpleasant. But this is not the real equanimity, not the neutral feeling that the Buddha talked about under upeka. It is still a mind state conditioned by your mental hindrance. Sensual desire and ill will, your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, are your first two hindrances of mind. The Buddha wants you to understand them. When they are there, you must be aware. And the Vedana Nupassana is very important. Then you can see clearly your mental hindrance, your like and your dislike, your sensual desire and your ill will. Then this also ties in with your first two of the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Yeah. Then from there, you come to know how your mind stir. Your reaction of mind is the one that condition your mind to be emotional, reactive. This is how you create the evil roots. This is how you create your mental hindrance. This is how your lack of peace come to be. Then through all this understanding, you reverse it. Then you move on to the deeper part of consciousness. From feeling, you go into the content of consciousness. You start to see the content of consciousness. That is the one that condition you to be emotional. The movement inside through your wrong view, your delusion, your conditioning, your habitual tendency, your evil root. This is the one that stir and condition you into various mind state. So the Buddha actually very systematically trained you. Then not until you understand what Vedana and Citta is, not easy to move into consciousness and Dhamma. Because the final fourth foundation is from Citta Nupassana, you move on to Dhamma Nupassana. The Dhamma is the unfolding of wisdom. This fourth foundation is very important. This is where you actually develop mindfulness on the five hindrance of mind, the five aggregate of mind, the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. Then you witness the 18 sense rhyme. You trace the origination factor, then retrospectively you reverse it. Then after that, when your mind stabilizes, your wisdom is there, you start to witness the enlightenment factor, the seven factors of enlightenment arising in you. Every of the enlightenment factor that arise, you come to know, you come to be aware. Then when this enlightenment factor arise, it is because you are ready, you have the condition to understand the Dhamma. That's why the enlightenment factors are the factors of mind that can condition you to become enlightened. That's why it's called the factors of enlightenment, responsible for your enlightenment. So when you have the factors of enlightenment, you cultivate the last of the Dhamma Nupassana. The last is the Four Noble Truths. You develop the mindfulness on the Four Noble Truths, the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. That's how you awaken and become enlightened. Okay, with that, we will open up the second session. Second session is reporting. You can report your meditation and at the same time ask me any question that you might have with regard to the meditation, the sutta, the teaching, and how you can apply and use what you have learned here together with the understanding of the Buddha Dharma to help you to cultivate and understand life, overcome all of your life problem or suffering or situation. Okay, now anybody who has any written question, we start with the written question. Nobody? I ask you to write, if you are shy, you write. Okay, no written, we have this verbal reporting and question. Anybody who has any reporting, who wants to report your meditation or ask anything about the meditation and your understanding of the Dhamma or understanding of how you are going to develop this meditation, training of the mind. You have to ask, otherwise there is no condition for me to explain. Ingbi, where's the mic? Pass Ingbi the mic, thanks. Push it up. Okay.
Yes. Roughly for a meditator, how long will it take to reach the stage of stillness of the mind? Because usually we sit for 15 minutes.
Okay.
I think definitely I can't get the stillness. Okay. I can only be mindful a little while.
Very good. Thank you. It's a very good question. You see, it depends on the cultivator. It depends on the individual. And sometimes the same meditator, the same individual, it depends on your consistency of cultivation or practice. If you have developed this ability to develop the silent mind for quite a while, then you have this ability to cultivate your daily mindfulness either through your bowing or through your daily mindfulness in the midst of your activity at home and in the office. You will be able to actually sit very fast. The very moment you sit, you will be in sati, then your mind will stabilize very fast. Then you will enter silence and stillness very fast. But that one, you must have this constant training, the religious routine. You must do it with a lot of sincerity and determination. That's why I remember during the early days when I cultivate, I always tell people it's like a full-time job. Understand? Full-time job doesn't mean you have to retire. Please, no. Full-time is you are continuously cultivating in the midst of initially your waking moment. The moment I wake up, I aware. Then I develop this daily mindfulness. I have my religious routine. My religious routine were very, very good because they help me in the training of the mind to develop the stability of mindfulness. I remember the bowing helped me so much. Master Xuan Hua, when I took refuge, he said, if you want to become his disciple, you must pay respect to the Buddha. He said, recite Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Pho, pay respect. 10,000 bow. You must do it within maximum 3 months. So 3 months, I work it out. Per month is about 3,000 plus. 3,000 plus is not much actually. So I divide by the number of days, it's only 100 plus bow. So I try. Then I realize I can do a lot more than the 100 over bow. So as I get used to the thing, I started to do. Then I finish it off within less than 2 months. But the beauty is, after about a few days, when the rhythm set in, I realized the bowing and the mindfulness become automatic. But that was because I already have my daily mindfulness. I already trained. Then I realized this one stabilized it very fast. Then after I did that, throughout the day, most of the time I aware, because the continuity is there. And every day I do at least morning before I sleep and in between whenever I am free. Then when I go to bed and when I wake up, I develop the daily mindfulness at home. Then later I was able to carry it into my activity of life. I start off by from the house, how I get my car key, how I enter my car, how I drive and how I move. I fully aware until I reach office, how I bring my bag down. Fully aware how I actually move. When you are fully aware, it's totally different. Even when you are in the bed, how you turn, how you move, every movement of it, there is awareness. And very funny one, the mind doesn't think one, it's just together. Then how you come out also very different. Then later on I realized the walking also very different. Yeah, the walking, when I walk, the mindfulness is everywhere, every part of it. I don't know how to describe to you. I use sound, like ta 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 ta, means like every moment of awareness, ta 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 ta, like that. But every part of me is like I aware. Not only watching the leg or the movement or what, no, the whole body, the whole awareness, the kaya, the whole mind inside, every part that is moving, I aware. Very funny. Then the turning, the movement, everything like a flow. You know what is a flow? Like a tap, I told you last time. Ajahn Jagaro described it very well. Initially, drip. Drip. Means between interval of 1 second or 1 over second, then it starts to aware. Then another drip. Then after a while, when you stabilize, the drip become a bit faster, less than 1 second, drip, 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 until one day it become a flow. No more drip, drip, no more gap. When it become a flow, that mindfulness like continuous. That's how I start to see. How come like that one? My movement and activity all like a flow. Then the mind. I start to see my mind in sati. Everything I see, everything I hear is like a flow. Then the car, all the movement, even the television, all the movement inside that, like a flow. No matter how fast I can follow. Even the fan and all things, even the moving car, no matter how fast, the phenomena, no matter how fast, the mind is there, the awareness is. That's how I came to know sati is not only for slow movement. You don't slow down the movement, you don't slow down the phenomena. In the midst of life, at that speed, you're aware. Your mind is capable of that awareness. Then I start to see the flow of nature. Everything is like a flow, continuous movement of mind. Then I like, throughout the day, I can be mindful. Then later on, I can even be mindful when I lie down to sleep. From the moment my body rests to the moment I wake up, like I never sleep, the awareness is fully inside. How my mind move and want to create the dream state, the subconscious state, how it still, how it move inside, everything is aware. Then still, silent inside. Any subconscious release from the brain, I aware. That's why I come to know how thought come to be everything. That's why I can understand Krishna mostly, because it happened inside, from my mind. As a human being, that's why the Buddha said, within this phantom length body of ours, along with perception, thought and mindfulness, he proclaimed the world, the cause of the arising of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path that leads to it. Means you can realize the Four Noble Truths within this. You can awaken within this form and mind. So all these are possible. But I remember, because my mind was very, very determined. I was full of faith at that time. That's why I know the spiritual faculty are very important. The sadha, the virya, then the sati just come. And when the sati come, I realize like what the Buddha said. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Very true. So true. That's why I like that saying. The moment I saw that Dhammapada verse 21, I realized this is it. That's why when I compound understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha during the early days when I came out to share and teach, these are the few, I call it the words of wisdom of the Buddha. That's why I put them down. Dhammapada verse 1, 2, 183, verse 21, 22, 23, and the last advice before he passed away. I realize these are the important Dhammapada words that he has actually emphasized on. And when you understand this field, you know the important area of cultivation that you need to train your mind and work on it. So that's why, coming back to the question by Engby, how fast depend on the individual and depend on how serious you are and how much you put in to train your mind. So immediately after that, I realize meditation is never a problem. I just sit down, I just silent, immediately I'm in this silent mind. Then after that I will be in stillness. Then later on I realize in the midst of life, my mind can be still. In the midst of activity, the mind can be still. No thought, nothing. Even when I talk to you, there's no thought, nothing. And throughout the day you can be like that. So it's a very different type of cultivation. But it can be done, like the Buddha said, it can be done. That's why the beauty is, the Buddha as a refuge is so beautiful, because he has done it, and he gives us the confidence. That's why we take refuge, we have this very strong faith, then we put to test, then it stand up to investigation. So beautiful. Yeah, Sister Lee.
Initially when you start to practice this,
yes,
will you realize that there is a certain period, suddenly you are lost there is no conscious.
No what?
No conscious. That means
suddenly no.
You.
No, that one was during the early days. The early day when I enter into absorption. When I enter into absorption, yes. There was certain time, totally no thought inside. But it's like a blank one. No, not conscious, not aware at all. Like your mind blank.
But that's not right, isn't it?
Nothing to do with right or wrong. You see, people who like that type of meditation, to them is right. And they will do it. So when we use right and wrong, it become like subjective. It become like division. So we try to avoid this thing. When your understanding is at that level, you will do things at that level of understanding. That's why some people, they believe that is the way to meditate. But what is important is you just have to inquire deep. In the name of meditation, what is it that we try to develop? Are we trying to develop a state of mind that gives rise to a fantastic meditation? Do you equate the very good meditation or the fantastic mind state or meditative experience as equivalent to enlightenment? If you reflect it this way, then you will know, because the ultimate realization is through wisdom. Understand? Without wisdom, you can have very fantastic and marvelous experience of meditation. Like your mind suddenly enter very deep state, very profound state. Certain people say they realize the truth through an explosion of mind and all those things. Then all of a sudden everything become clear. So if wisdom accompany, then no problem. It's possible, understand? Then the explosion of consciousness can be like that type of mundane or crude consciousness give way to a more refined consciousness. It can happen. But there must be wisdom that arise accompanying it. But if it's just a blank mind, then after that you wake up from that very deep calmness. Maybe you feel very good, very fresh, like no thought. But if the wisdom doesn't come, means you actually haven't really develop any of the Dhamma that the Buddha are teaching you. So without the wisdom, when you confront the reality of life and existence, the first noble truth, that is the best test. When you are confronted with the first noble truth, whether you are still peaceful or not, whether you are still able to have the understanding of what is going on and be at peace with everything or not, whether you still reactive, you still have craving, you still can be afflicted or affected, your mind can still stir or not. That is a very good test. The other thing that you must understand is the meditation that the Buddha teach is always you have to come back to the Noble Eightfold Path. Because the fourth noble truth, the Buddha clearly states that if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the path of enlightenment, cessation of all suffering. Why? Because the Buddha knew without the Noble Eightfold Path, you cannot transform. You cannot become a noble one. A noble one is an enlightened person who is very noble in every aspect. He is very noble in his views. Understanding of life is the law that governs life and existence. He has right view. With regards to the law of karma, law of the mind, how it functions, then the truth within the universe means the Dhamma, the universal truth, or the Dhamma that the Buddha teaches. So when you have this understanding, you like understand the secret of life, you know how to live. So when you have right view with regards to law of karma, you know the importance of right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, then you will not violate this nature's law. Then when you know how your mind functions, you will develop the training of mind to be mindful, to be aware. Then the right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought, the wrong thought, the fearful thought, the thought that create delusion, the evil roots, all this you will come to understand. Then with the four right effort comes the four right mindfulness that cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. Then wisdom come to be then samadhi come to be. Yeah. So when sati and samadhi is there, there is this silent mind, clarity of mind. You can see things as they are. Then the wisdom, the awakening can come. So that is how you become enlightened. Not because of a fantastic mind state, a meditative experience, that after that you believe you are enlightened, but you don't have right view. Your speech are still very crude. Your action, your thought process are still very crude. You are still very egoic. And then you have to check. Then that meditation is not what the Buddha teach. The meditation that the Buddha teaches, whatever you do in the name of meditation, finally you have to come back to Noble Eightfold Path. And the key is Samasati, the four foundation of mindfulness. When you have the four foundation of mindfulness, when you understand, Noble Eightfold Path automatic fall into place. Because when the wisdom come, then you see the Noble Eightfold Path by yourself. No need anybody teach you. That cultivator will understand by itself. Then it will know what is proper, what is not proper. That's why the right view, the condition, the right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, all become very clear. So that is what you need to actually focus on. In the name of meditation, what is it that we try to develop? If the meditation doesn't bring you back to the wisdom that will awaken you and allow you to have the understanding to see the importance of this Noble Eightfold Path, then you are not the noble ones. Noble ones are enlightened ones who are very noble in every aspect, very noble in the way they carry themselves. Their speech are very noble. Their action are very noble. Their thought process are very noble. The way they live their life, they are very noble. The understanding of life, they have this noble right view. And because of their ability to have this wisdom, they have full mindfulness. They have sati. They have heedfulness. And their mind is always in samadhi because there is wisdom that will condition the upekkha within. So upekkha is the equanimity that will cause the mind to be unwavering, collected. That's why sati and samadhi is always there. The mind cannot stir. The mind understand. We all these are sankhara. Sankhara is just activity of mind, consciousness. They come and they go, impermanent. You grasp and cling, you hold, you give meaning, you suffer. And because they come and go, it's not a permanent unchanging entity. It's not you. You cannot call this is me, this is I, because these are all conditions arising, causal phenomena, mind make ade. If you start to realize and see all this, then you become very, very clear. Then you are no longer deluded by what the thought tell you, what consciousness try to deceive and delude you. You cannot be deluded anymore. You cannot get yourself entangled anymore. There is no more delusion, there is no more ignorance. So this is the process where the realization come, the understanding come, the wisdom come. You have this, what they call panya inside. That's why every moment of sense or consciousness, there is this wisdom they call yoniso manasikara. And this wisdom you cannot learn. You have to go through the cultivation and awaken yourself. Nobody can give it to you. Nobody can teach it to you. Because it is not a rigid knowledge. Not something they can read and memorize and commit to memory and try to live according to that knowledge. Cannot. Your wisdom is not rigid. You have to have the complete understanding, or what I should say, the total understanding of what sankhara is, law of karma, the right view. Everything must be there. Then you understand that you know how to deal. Every situation, every individual, they are all different. Any place, any time, any condition, you will know how to arise your mind. You will know how to become peaceful. You will know how to free your mind. So all this is wisdom, panya. And this one you cannot learn. Because I cannot teach you what to do. Because every moment, every instant, everybody is different. Every condition, every civilization is there. So, the same event, different conditioning, different individual, the solution is different, the understanding is different. You cannot say, oh, this person with this problem, the Buddha say do this, Brother Teo say do this, you should die on it. You cannot. It doesn't work that way. Because you only interpret what the Buddha say and what I say, then you think this is the truth. Then you say, hey, you must do this. No, everyone is different. It's just like just now in VR, how long it take to go into stillness. If I answer 15 minutes, 20 minutes, or half an hour, or 1 hour, I lie to you. That's how. Well, everyone is different. So there is no rigid answer. So it depends on how you train your mind, how you understand the thing, and how diligent you are. And then this condition can come about. It can unfold. You can immediately have it, no problem. So all this is part and parcel of panya or wisdom that you will realize and awaken to yourself. And this is why the Dhamma is very unique. Ispachetang means can be realized by the wise, each for themselves, nobody else. Only the wise one understand what the Dhamma is. You can talk about it, you can think about it, you can try to understand it using your thought, but only the wise one can comprehend. That's it. Okay? What is the time now? Wow, exactly 6 o'clock. You got any more questions? Maybe one more if you have. Then we go, because I came late. I must compensate the 10 minutes. Yes, you can ask.
Brother Teo, for meditators, Buddhist meditators, of course the main aim is to be more noble and eventually to be liberated.
Okay.
What about for meditators who are not Buddhist? They meditate a lot.
Oh, okay.
But then they have no knowledge of the Dhamma. That means...
Okay. So your question is what?
Between Buddhist and non-Buddhist
meditators. Yeah, what is your question? What do
so
you want to know?
Will they achieve liberation?
Oh, can. Because the Dhamma is everywhere. The Dhamma is not monopolized by the Buddha. The Buddha already said it was there before him. He only came to realize it. So this teaching, the truth, the Buddha Dharma, is not something we monopolize. You can be a non-Buddhist. That's why the Buddha is very liberal. That's why when I give talk at other places, I always said this is the most liberal teaching. You don't have to believe the Buddha to come and listen to his teaching. You understand not? You don't have to be a Buddhist to learn his teaching. He just said, Ehi Pasiko, come and investigate into what he said. Don't believe him. And if you are not ready, if you don't have the understanding, you want to renounce and take refuge under him, he also doesn't want you. The Buddha said, not now. Make sure you are ready. Otherwise, no point. Because the truth is not something that people can monopolize. It's not monopolized by Buddhists. And the truth is anything that can explain the reality. Whatever that can explain the way things are is a truth. Understand that? Because this is a nature's law, truth, the reality. So that's why when you awaken, means you have this wisdom to understand the truth and the reality behind everything that arises. That's why the Buddha always say there is a cause behind whatever that arises. And this cause, the Buddha has explained. Because of that, a lot of his disciples become enlightened. Even when Asajji spoke this very same statement that the Buddha spoke, Sariputta, that time before he became Sariputta, he awakened and became a Sotapan. He just inquire from Asajji. So there is no Dhamma there. It's just the truth. Because Sariputta has his past cultivation. His mind is ready. He only needs somebody to explain to him the nature's law. Understand? The law of karma. The truth of the law of cause and effect. So the moment Asajji mentioned what the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there is a cause behind. Oh, then he straightway understand everything is conditioned arising cause. It doesn't happen by itself. It doesn't happen by chance. There are causes and conditions behind. Then the second stanza is the causes behind my teacher has explained. Means the right view, the law of karma, law of the mind. Means karma niyama, chitta niyama, and dhamma niyama. So straight away from there, automatically this Sariputta awakened. Then that time when I read this so-called two stanza, you know what I had inside my mind? Very funny. I told myself, if I heard this, I also can be a Sotapanna at that time. Yeah, because I understand why it's like that. I only need people to tell me certain truth about the nature's law. And the first one that told me was this Ajahn Yantra. Very good. I need to know what the mind is. He was the one that told me what is the mind. He said, body is just a body. Mind is mind. Mind never the body. Body never the mind. We choose to take care of mind. He said, mind, most important. Well, when I heard this for the first time, it's not written in the Dhamma book, but so beautiful, because I need to know what mind is. Then he was the first one that tell me, mind is mind. Body is body. That mind is M-I-N-D, not M-I-N-E. not whatever is mine, whatever is yours is also mine. No, not that one. He said M-I-N-D. Your mind is mind, body is body. Body is never the mind never the body. We choose to take care of mind. Then he said the body important too, because you must harmonize to cultivate, so that your mind actually can benefit from this human life. Because without the body in harmony, the mind cannot cultivate. Without this sense basis, consciousness cannot arise. And without the consciousness, the form and mind cannot trigger off the Dhamma. And you cannot use it to cultivate. So that's why this body is an important tool. The mind and the body must harmonize. Just from what he said, the next moment I meditate is so different. I become so brave. I was sitting. During that time earlier on, I have this pain problem. After I sat too long, the pain used to come. So after he said that, I became so brave. So I sat, because after that we went for the eight precepts, the 3-day, 2-night one, the weekend. This one is the 8-precept retreat. So you know, whole day walking, sitting, and doing all those anapanasati. So on the second day, I remember, after that long sitting and walking, so much pain. So I sat, then the pain came, Then suddenly my mind understand, mind is mind, body is body. Body never the mind never the body. So I say pain is not me, so I sat. Then I tell myself, even if I paralyze, never mind, I will see it through, because I have faith in what he said. So the moment I relax and silence my mind and accept this reality and have this very strong faith and confidence in my own understanding of what the mind is, all of a sudden, you don't believe, within that minutes, a few minutes only, suddenly there is a flash of light search through my mind. Brightness, total brightness. The shift of consciousness came. Then my mind is full of energy, full of clarity. Then I realize the whole pain is gone. The whole pain, no more. Then my mind, very funny, that time I looked down, because it was down there, the lake there. I saw the mind and the form, the two separate. The phenomena is still there. That thing is still there. The phenomena, the tension also in the movement is still there. But the mind is separated. Then I realized the two doesn't link. Because that time there was no craving. There was no attachment. There was no clinging. There was no aversion of that sensation. Then the consciousness detached. Wow, that time I become so full of joy. I was looking at it. Then I went in. That time my sati very strong. That's why I went in. I can feel every part, how the vibration inside. you all describe all those things, the pooling, the nothing. This one go in like microscope like that, very clear. I saw everything, how all the things, the tactile movement, the tactile consciousness that condition you to grasp and click. Wow, that movement all. The mind is totally detached. Then later on I came out, when I read about the 16 stages on jnana, you heard of this, 16 jnana? The first one is what? Parichena, paricheya, namarupa paricheya jnana. Means the insight into form and mind. You're able to discern clearly between what is mind, what is form. Then only I realized this is the real one. Not the one that say there is a knowing mind that know the form. That's why the knowing mind is the mind, the form is the form. That one is knowledge. This one is really the mind and the form, the two, different, separate. That's why namarupa paricheda jnana, that insight is different. Then when I came to understand that, very funny, from that day onward, I got no more problem with meditation pain. Oh, pain is never a problem until today. And that was 20 over years ago. That's why very funny, all this thing. So your consciousness, your mind, your body, and your nature, you need to understand what this is. They are all different. How each and every of these manifest. How upon contact, the consciousness come to be. Then how the mind stir and react. The content of consciousness, how it come out. Through your conditioning, through your memory, through your wrong view, through your delusion. So you have to see all this in your meditation, in your silent state of awareness or sati. That's why the mind that is silent can understand all this. Because all these are byproduct, condition arising. It comes from that true mind. It is not you. It's condition arising. That's why they call it the phenomenal world, the mental phenomenon, the physical phenomenon, nature's phenomenon. Okay, so we end. Yeah, exactly 10 minutes. So I give you all back 10 minutes because I was late. Transfer merit, then we will invoke the blessing for the nation. Okay, share your merits for the devas. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anamoditwa cirang rakantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Ittavata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transform merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo. Let this marriage accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all too be well and happy. Okay, we invoke the blessing for the country. Devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati hitu ca hito bhavatu loko ca raja bhavatu dhammiko. May all rains fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the country, government, the rulers, and the king be righteous. Okay, we will make the aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamena Mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to the Buddha, Kuan Yin, and all the worthy ones.
Let's say three times sadhu to thanks Brother Teo and pay respect mindfully.